following immediately after. "And here?" I glance over his head at the empty hall. "We can't..." There go my socks. "We can." He flicks his wrist, and the clicking sound of a lock echoes off the stone. "My house, remember. They are all my rooms." His eyes lock with mine, holding me willingly captive as his hands slide up the length of my legs, caressing my inner thighs, waking every nerve ending along their path before he reaches for the buttons of my sparring pants. My breath catches. My house, my chair, my woman. He punctuates each claim with a flick of his thumb, popping button by button free. Need floods my body, flushes my skin with a heady, addictive rush. He grips my hips with both hands and yanks me to the edge of the chair, then cups the back of my neck and pulls me into a devastating kiss. My lips part, and the second he licks into my mouth, his tongue stroking mine, my core fucking melts. The kiss is slow and sensuous, our mouths meeting again and again as I weave my fingers through his hair and completely, totally surrender. He senses the shift, growling low in his throat, and the kiss spins out of control in less than a heartbeat, turning wild and urgent, tasting of that sweet madness that only exists between us. He's the only person in this world I can't get enough of, the only one I constantly crave. Love, chemistry, attraction, desire. Everything between us keeps me constantly burning like an ember. A single touch is all it takes to send us both up in flames. By the time he breaks the kiss, his breathing ragged as he orders me to lift my hips, I don't care where we are, as long as he puts his hands on me. The whole assembly could walk through those doors and I wouldn't notice, not with the way Zayden's looking at me. The heat in his eyes could melt iron. He hooks his fingers into the waistband of my pants and my underwear, then tugs them down my legs, kissing the tops of my thighs, the curves of my knees, and every inch of skin he uncovers, drawing soft sighs and impatient whimpers from my lips. Fabric hits the dais, leaving me bare from the waist down. "Zayden." My fingers tug at his hair, my heart pounding so hard I can't help but wonder if he can hear it, if the whole world can. Instead of rising so I can get my hands on him, he pushes my knees wide. I gasp at the cold rush of air between my thighs, but an instant later his mouth sets me on fire as he drags his tongue from my slick entrance to my clit. White, hot pleasure streaks through my body like lightning, and I cry out, the sound filling the hall. "This is what I fantasize about when I'm away from you," he says against my heated skin. "Your taste, your scent, the little gasps you take right before you come." He settles in, his hands splaying wide on my inner thighs, pinning me in place as he uses his tongue to rob me of every thought. He swirls around that sensitive bud over and over, teasing, arousing, driving me higher and higher, but denies me the very touch I need. "Is this what you think about? My mouth between your soft thighs?" God, how can he think, let alone form coherent sentences? He scrapes his teeth over me delicately, and I gasp at the sensation, then whimper when his tongue follows. I can only moan when he slides a long finger inside me, and his answering groan vibrates through every nerve in my body. Yes, it feels so exquisite that I muffle my next cry with my fist. More. It's always more when it comes to him. He alternates between quick and teasing flicks and long, lazy licks, building an ever-tightening spiral of pleasure deep within me. Another finger joins the first, stretching me with a delicious burn, and my hips rock as he thrusts them in a slow, hard rhythm that makes me crave every part of him. Power rises, scalding my already flushed skin, crackling in the very air around us. Without stopping, he releases my thighs and reaches around my hip, then retrieves the conduit. "Take it. I want you." My fingers slide from his hair to grasp the orb, my hips chasing every stroke he gives me, my breath coming in uneven pants. "You have me," I whimper at the mindless pleasure that rushes up my spine. and I have you exactly where I need you. Even my hand can't muffle the primal sounds he drags from me, as his tongue matches the rhythm of his fingers, pleasure whipping through me with every stroke, gathering, building, stringing my body tight as a bow. God, it's the sight of him kneeling, fully clothed. The leather of his flight jacket against my bare thighs pushes me all the way to the edge and burns itself into my memory. My thighs tremble when he curls his fingers inside me, stroking that sensitive wall that makes stars blink in my eyes. Sane, my breath stutter. Right there, those gasps. That's what I hear when I wake. Already hard for you. With the next caress, pleasure and power crest through me, over me, in simultaneous waves that crash again and again. There's no thunder, no strike, only the hum of energy in my hand that flares with the strokes of Zayden's mouth and fingers. But there's no release either, no gentle letdown, only the waves of infinite ecstasy that come without breaking. He lifts his head, keeping me in a suspended state of indescribable bliss as his eyes lock with mine. I can't take it, I manage to say as the waves come and come with no end in sight. Yes, you can. Look at where you are. He grasps my hip and surges upward, propelling me deeper into the chair until my back hits the blackened wood. And still, he keeps stroking, holding me prisoner with my own pleasure, brushing his lips over mine, he smiles. Look at how beautiful you are, Violet, coming for me on Tirindor's throne. Holy shit. I'd known that's where we were, but I hadn't known. He grasps one of my thighs and drapes it over the edge of the throne, then braces his knee at the edge of the cushion and lifts my other leg over his shoulder as he slides down my body, lowering his head as he works his fingers ceaselessly, beckoning the endless waves. Oh, God, I'm going to die right here, right now. Every time I have to sit with the assembly, I'll be thinking about this, about you. He slides his hand under my ass and lifts me to his mouth, then replaces his fingers with the thick stab of his tongue. Searing pleasure rips through me, arching my back, and there's no time to muffle the cry he wrings from me. But he doesn't exactly stifle his deep moan either. I can't. My heart has to give out at some point. You can, and you will. He strums his thumb lightly over my swollen clit, and my hips jerk. The pleasure is sharper than a knife. Shimmering onyx wraps around my mind and everything intensifies. A driving, pounding, uncontrollable need courses through me with every beat of my pulse, demanding an outlet, demanding I rip through the confines of the leather and trade her sweet taste for the incomparable perfection of sinking into her when she comes. Satan, I gasp for breath, gripping the conduit so tightly I prepare for the sound of breaking glass. It's his desire flooding our bond, compounding my own, his desperation, his power brushing against mine. I need to fuck her, to flip her over the arm of this throne and drive into her, but I can't. I need her nail marks in the wood, need her cries filling this whole fucking house, need her knowing what I can be for her, anything and everything she needs. She's heaven in my mouth, flawless. Mine. And she's almost there. God, yes. Her legs are shaking. Her walls are fluttering around my tongue. I love her so fucking much. I shatter, splintering into a million glittering shards of bliss as I scream out his name. Power and light course through me without burning, and I arch again and again, coming apart at the seams of what I think is me, but might be him. He untangles from my mind, and I mourn the loss even as my body slackens. It's my lungs I feel draw air, my own power that crackles through the orb in my hand before settling, my own heartbeat that finally slows as the last of the orgasm fades. What the hell did you do? I lift my head, my eyes flaring when I realize Zayden isn't tangled with me. He's 3 feet and a million miles away, backed against the assembly's table, gripping the shadow-covered edges with white knuckles, his eyes squeezed shut so tightly I wince. Zane, just need a second. I manage the awkward task of sitting up and moving to stand. Stay right there. He holds his hand out. Every line of his gorgeous body is drawn tight, and his leathers. God, that has to be painful. Come here, I whisper. No. My head draws back. You can't possibly think I'm gonna let you get me off twice, let alone whatever the fuck that last time was, and not, that's exactly what's happening. His eyes flash open, and the heat, the longing, the desperation I see there feels like it could be my own, because a few seconds ago it was. I felt how much you need me. I shift forward to the edge of the chair, throne, whatever. You want me over the side of the throne, right? Grasping onto the arm so my nails scar it. Fuck. The table groans under his grip. I should not have done that. Oh, you definitely should have. It was quite possibly the hottest moment of my entire life. You ever want to bring me to my knees or win an argument? That's a sure bet. A tight smile curves his mouth at the reference to his words from last year. My toes touch the dais. You gave me what I fantasize about. Please don't. The words are forced through gritted teeth. It's the please that stops me in my tracks. I'm hanging by a thread, so I'm begging you. Please. Don't. He hangs his head, and shadows slip across the dais, pushing my clothes toward me. Confused is an understatement, but I stand up and quickly get my clothes back on down to my socks, then pick up my boots. Do you want to clue me in on why you're so keen on torturing yourself? He exhales just a shade short of a sigh. Because I need you to see I'm more than capable of worshiping your body without reciprocation. You're not a convenient placeholder for me to fuck. This is about Cat? I know that. So much for the afterglow of the world's longest orgasm, I'm right back to pissed. But you don't. He releases his death grip on the table and points at the throne. Sit. For a repeat performance? A corner of his mouth quirks upward. So I can help you with your boots. You're too short for the chair. Well aware, I mutter, sitting back on the throne and letting my feet dangle. I don't like not reciprocating. He lifts my left foot, slipping on my boot. I don't like you thinking you're not the center of my fucking world. Yet here we are. And before you start another argument, I'll fuck you later tonight. Trust me, I'm making a momentary point, not a lasting vow of masochism. He braces my foot on his thigh and ties the laces. The sight eases some of the tension in my chest. No one would ever believe that scary, badass Zayden Ryerson would tie anyone's shoes. I thought you were going to kill her, he says quietly. Right. Back to Cat. I almost did. I lower one foot, then raise the other at his cue. Would that have been unforgivable to you? He finishes tying my boot, then lets go of my foot. Nothing you could ever do would be unforgivable to me. Stepping back, he leans against the edge of the table again. And I don't particularly care if Kat lives, but I'm not cheering for her to die either. She's a necessary yet volatile ally, and Serena would be a disastrous enemy to make. But I do care that you would have regretted killing her. And in that rage, I would have if he hadn't shown up. How could you ever love someone like her? I didn't. He shrugs. You are the first and only woman I've ever loved. You were just engaged to her for... I pause. I don't even know how long you were engaged for. I feel stupid. I would have told you if you'd asked. That's the problem here, Violet. You don't ask. It's not like you ask me about my exes. I cross my legs. because I don't want to know, which I suspect is the same reason you continue to not ask me about the things that actually bother you. But let's just ignore that, like we usually do. Seems to be working out for us. He lays the sarcasm on thick. I look away because he's right. Damn him. Avoiding the potentially devastating questions like why he's never told me about the deal he made with my mother seems prudent when there's a possibility of losing him over a wrong answer. He moves on when I fall quiet. Kat and I weren't engaged. We were betrothed. And yes, there's a difference to me. Now who's arguing semantics, let alone on behalf of the woman who just warped all of my emotions and turned me into an abyss of rage, some of which is creeping back in. We'll get to that in a second. The betrothal clause of the alliance kicked in when she turned 20. The table creaks as he fully sits back against it. We tried it out for about 3/4 of a year. But we weren't compatible, and it came to light that Takaris was never going to let us have the luminary anyway. He wanted us to use it there. I ended the betrothal, which, as you know, caused some problems. Weren't compatible? I can't blame the insidious stab of jealousy on Kat this time. That burning sensation in the pit of my stomach is all me. That's not exactly what she implied about your sex life. You don't have to like someone to fuck them. He shrugs. My jaw slackens considering what we just did. His head tilts as he watches me. As I recall, you didn't exactly like me the first time. Do not finish that sentence. I jab my finger in his direction. On the other hand, I was already in love with you. My posture softens. That right there is why I'm hopelessly in love with him. Because no one else gets to see him like this, just me. Hardly seems fair now that I think about it. He drums his fingers on the table, and I wanted you too badly to care that you didn't feel the same way about me. Not that I'd given you any reason to. Fuck, I wanted you to run in the opposite direction. I remember. Our gazes lock, and my fingers curl with the need to touch him. I reach for the conduit instead. Good. Maybe you'll remember that the next time Kat goes digging around your head. Digging? She made me jealous. The word is bitter on my tongue. She didn't make you anything. Felix won't miss the conduit if I throw it at Zayden's head, will he?
Oh, really? You heard what she said. How would you feel if one of my previous lovers had you on the mat for a challenge, then told you that he knows how I taste?
He tenses.
How I feel on top of him. I lower my tone, letting sex slide over every single word. How he had me first and insinuates that he plans on having me last, too.
His jaw flexes and shadows curl around the legs of the table. She wasn't my first by a long shot.
Not the point. You want me to ask more questions? Then don't avoid them.
Fine. None of your previous lovers are riders, unless there's history I'm unaware of when it comes to Atos. So they'd never have me on the mat. I'm guessing infantry, but again, I don't want to know, so I don't ask.
I didn't sleep with Dane.
But he's ridiculously on the mark with the infantry guess. I knew that the second he kissed you after threshing. It looked awkward as fuck. He shoves his hand through his still mussed hair, and to answer the question, I'd feel jealous, which is something you have a unique ability to bring out in me. And then I'd kick his ass, partially because that's what I do when someone challenges me. And more importantly, for implying there's any other future besides the one where you and I are endgame. My breath abandons me in a rush I refuse to call a sigh.
Gods, he ruins me when he says things like that.
What else were you feeling on the mat? He asks. Anger. I glance up at the high, beamed ceiling in defeat. Inferiority, insecurity. She threw everything she had at me and it worked.
Anger, I understand. She said a lot that pissed me off, too.
He shakes his head. But inferiority is something you'll have to explain, considering you're more powerful than any other cadet.
It has nothing to do with signets. I gesture to the giant chair I'm seated on. She pointed out that you're a Ryerson.
You've known that since Parapet. He taps the rebellion relic along his neck.
That's not what I mean. You just called this chair a throne.
Because it is, or it was before the unification.
Another infuriatingly casual shrug. I blink as realization smacks me straight in the face. Wait, are you the king of Tirindor?
Fuck no.
He shakes his head, then pauses. I mean,
yes, technically. I'm the Duke of Aracia by birth, but Llewellyn's on our side and doing just fine at governing the province. Even if Tirindor became independent, I'm more useful on the battlefield than on a throne.
We're off topic. I know damn well you don't feel inferior to me. So who, Cat?
I press my lips between my teeth.
I think I liked you better before you decided that feelings were something we need to discuss.
Sorry to inconvenience you, but this year the role of Violet Sorengale, he points to me, will be played by Zayden Ryerson, he taps his chest, who will drag her kicking and screaming if he has to, into a real relationship with real discussions because he refuses to lose her again. If I have to evolve, you do too.
He folds his arms across his chest. Is he done talking in third person? I pick at the metal band around the orb. Cat was right in one regard. She is the better match. She's noble by birth, brave for becoming a flyer, driven, ruthless, and mean as hell, just like you.
Fuck, they're pretty much the same person.
His eyes flare, then narrow.
Hold on. Do you somehow think that I find you inferior to her?
My shrug isn't exactly nonchalant. He shifts like he's about to move toward me, then stops himself, putting his hands firmly back on the table.
Violet, you were just in my thoughts. You know I think you're perfect, even when you frustrate the shit out of me. Now tell me about the insecurity. I thought we handled that last year.
Sure, before I knew you were leading a revolution and before you declared you'd always keep secrets, and way before some beautiful aristocrat who you used to be betrothed to but conveniently was never mentioned appeared with her big brown doe eyes and sharp-ass claws at our bedroom door half naked.
She what?
His eyebrows rise. And then has the nerve to tell me I'm not special just because you like to fuck me.
I do like to fuck you.
A slow smile curves his mouth.
I love it, actually.
Don't side with her! My nails dig into the cushion beneath me.
Ugh!
The shout echoes off the rafters and I cover my face with my hands. Why does she turn me into such a fucking mess? And how do I make it stop?
I'll end up killing her before solstice.
I hear his boots, then feel his warm hands gently clasp my wrists.
Look at me.
Slowly, I lower my hands. And he holds them in his as I open my eyes. He's right where we started this chat, on his knees, in front of me.
I don't want to have this discussion again.
He uses the wingleader voice, then softens.
But I will. You're about to get some hard truths, because I wasn't clear enough in Cordon.
My shoulders straighten.
You raged today because you were angry.
He stroked his thumbs over my pulse.
You got jealous because you were jealous.
You grappled with inferiority because for some reason I can't understand, you feel inferior. And you lashed out with insecurity because I think both of us are just figuring this out as we go. Own your feelings like you did last year and be honest with me. Cat can't plant emotions, warp them, or even sway them unless you are already headed that way. Cat can only amplify what you're already feeling.
I swallow, but the lump forms in my throat anyway. It's all me.
Yeah, it's a shitty realization. I've been there. He laces his fingers with mine. She can take you from irritation to full-on rage in the span of a minute or two. And yes, she's really fucking powerful, but so are you. But the only weapons she wields are the ones you hand her. You want to keep control of your emotions? You need to have control in the first place. I can't. A pit forms in my stomach. I haven't been in control since Resin. I admit in a whisper. I let Tairn's emotions take over. I'm carrying around a conduit so I don't set your house on fire with my own damn power. I failed at the wards and now nearly failed tests, making shit decisions, fucking up left and right, and people's lives are in the balance. I keep hoping I'll find my feet, but I shake my head. He lifts a hand to my cheek, avoiding the swollen lump where Kat hit me. You have to find your center again, Violet. I can't do it for you. He holds my gaze, letting his words sink in before adding, You are a creature of logic and facts, and everything you know got turned upside down and shaken. You'll never know how truly sorry I am for that. But you can't just sit there and hope. You want it to change, then you have to figure it out, just like Gauntlet. You're the only one who can. He says it a hell of a lot kinder than he did last year. But how do I find my center while in the middle of a cat storm? I moan. He glances away. Look, Cat got to you because you weren't wearing your daggers. The one with the intertwined Vs? It's ruined to protect you from her gift. Keep them on until you find your feet, and she can't fuck with you. Same thing happened in Cordon. You took them off to wear that lacy thing you called a dress? Fuck, I wanted to rip it off with my teeth. His jaw ticks. You gave the daggers to me last year. My hand slides to his wrist. I figured she'd find a way to make my life difficult for breaking the agreement, and that would inevitably involve you. He leans in. I love you. She will never sit in this seat. She will never wear a tearish crown. She's never had me on my knees in front of her. His mouth curves into a wicked grin that makes me instantly ready for it to be tonight. And I've also never fucked her with my tongue. My lips part and heat stings my cheeks. Now, can we consider this matter discussed? Unfortunately, I have a briefing to get to. I nod. I have class. Right. Physics? He guesses as we both rise to our feet. History. I take his offered hand and we walk off the dais, which I'm surprisingly awful at, it turns out. Something about having read all the wrong books? Maybe you should find the right ones. His smile mirrors mine. And for a blissful second, it all feels normal. If that's a word that could ever apply to us. Maybe. When we reach the bustling hallway, he cups the back of my neck and pulls me in for a quick, hard kiss. Do me a favor, he says against my mouth. Anything. Come to bed early tonight. An excerpt from Article 2, Section 1, The Aracia Accord. Flyers and riders are held equal in every regard, with the exception of wing structure. Riders will maintain their wings, sections, and squads, as well as retain their commands. Every drift will be absorbed by a squad, and their leader will replace the squad's current executive officer for unit cohesiveness and efficiency. Chapter 49. I feel like you're the only one who isn't surprised, Imogen says as we stand in the courtyard after formation the next morning. We're the strongest squad, they're the strongest drift. I don't know how the rest of you are surprised. I shrug, glancing over at Kat's drift, who all seem to be turning various shades of purple and green from yesterday's challenges. Same goes for our squad. Here we go, Rhiannon hands six of us familiar green patches. Do we really have to give them these?
Riddick's lip curls at the patch we worked our asses off for. The patch the first years fought to hold on to.
Yes, Rhiannon chides. It's the right thing to do. As of this moment, they're part of our squad, whether we like it or not.
I choose to not, Sloane remarks. Laughing, I run my thumb over the patch.
I'll take one to Kat, Rhiannon says quietly. You don't have to.
I've got it. I give her what I hope is a reassuring smile.
Let's do this.
Let's do this, she repeats. Second squad, time to move. We cross the frost-covered courtyard together, and I tap the dagger at my left hip, making sure it's right where I left it.
Zayden loves me. He chose me. I will be the most powerful rider of my generation.
Kat only has the power I choose to give her, with or without my dagger. The six flyers tense as we approach.
I think they've chosen to not as well, Sloane mutters to Arik.
Kat narrows her eyes on Sloane, and I step between them, offering Kat the patch.
Welcome to Second Squad Flame Section Fourth Wing, also known as the Iron Squad.
Similar greetings are given around us, but I keep my eyes locked on Kat as she stares at the patch like it might bite her.
Take the patch. What are we supposed to do with them?
We sew them onto our uniforms, Riddick answers from beside me, making a back and forth motion with his hand to simulate pulling a needle through his uniform, as though explaining a patch to children.
Why?
Her gaze sweeps over us, catching on the different patches like she's never noticed them before. I point to my collarbone.
Rank,
then my shoulder.
Wing.
Iron Squad.
Signet.
Patches are earned, not given. Riders and flyers now choose whatever location they want for every patch besides wing and rank, none of which are worn on flight leathers, which is probably why you never saw Zayden wearing them. He generally abhors patches.
There, that wasn't so bad. I can be civil.
I knew that. She snatches the patch out of my hand. I've known him for years. Rhiannon lifts a brow from my other side. I note the twinge of jealousy that she's been privy to parts of his life that I haven't. But there's no rage, no sour jolt of insecurity, and no self-loathing. I fucking love my daggers for a whole new reason. Her eyes widen slightly as if she senses that she can't touch me, then narrow into malicious slits. Civility is definitely not on her agenda.
Like I said, I offer her a bright smile. Welcome to the Quadrant's only Iron Squad.
Pivoting, I hook my arm through Rhiannon's and we start to walk away with the rest of the riders in our newly enlarged squad.
Being in the same squad doesn't change the fact that it's still my crown, she blurts.
Let's feed her to Sigail,
Rhiannon whispers as we pause. I look at Kat over my shoulder.
Did you know that Tirindor hasn't had a crown in more than 600 years? Turns out they melted them all down to forge the unification crown, so good luck with that.
It's going to be fun making your life as miserable as you've made mine.
Oh, fuck civility. God, she really can't help herself, can she?
Rhiannon says under her breath.
Kat, stop it, Marin chastises. You're being ugly. I've told you over and over that she didn't drop Luella, she fell. It's as simple as that.
You're welcome to try and make me miserable, I tell Kat, letting go of Rhiannon to walk back to the flyer.
Oh, and one more thing.
I lower my voice just slightly, well aware of every head within our squad that turns our direction.
What?
She snaps.
That trick you mentioned? You know, with the fingers?
A slow smile spreads across my face.
Thanks.
Kat's eyes bulge. Imogen laughs so hard she snorts as I walk back to Rhiannon.
Damn. Just damn.
Re claps a few times.
I fucking love you,
Riddick throws his arm around my shoulders. Anyone hungry? I woke up somewhere I hadn't exactly planned on and missed breakfast.
I would, I tell him, but I have plans in the library.
The library? Then me too, Sawyer chimes in, following quickly.
I'll go with, Rhiannon says with a nod.
If the three of you are going, then so am I, Riddick adds.
You guys don't have to come with me, I say once we're halfway through the foyer.
Oh, we needed to get away from Kat, Riddick waves me off. You're just the excuse. Her abilities are horrifying, Sawyer concludes. What if she decides to make me hate you?
Make Zayden hate you.
Rhiannon's eyebrows rise.
She can't, I shake my head.
Or make you instantly horny for some random flyer, and then you're not the only one in that bed when Zayden rotates back, Riddick muses. Her signet, or whatever they call it, is fucking terrifying.
She can only amplify the emotions you already have, I explain to them.
We could kill her, Sawyer reaches for the door handle. All the flyers are still struggling with the altitude, and their griffins are still sleeping half the day, according to Sleek. So they're probably at their weakest.
We all fall quiet. Not out of shock, but because we actually consider it for a few seconds. At least I do.
We can't kill her. She's our squad mate.
Wait, is that really the only ethical line there?
You sure?
Sawyer tilts his head. Say the word, and we'll bury a body. We still have a couple of hours before we're due in battle brief.
Good idea. I could use a snack.
Andarna's tone is indecently excited.
We do not eat our allies, Tairn lectures.
You never let me have any fun. I crack a genuine smile.
I appreciate the offer.
We walk into the library and I breathe in deeply. The scent in the two-story room is different than the archives. Parchment and ink still smell the same, but there's no earthy undertones because we're above ground, with light streaming in through the windows. Only the shelves on the first floor are filled with books, but I've made it my personal mission to see that the second floor looks the same within the next decade. Stone may not burn, but books do.
What are we doing here anyway? Riddick asks as I swing my pack off my shoulder, picking the first empty table I see to rest it on.
He gestures at Sawyer, who is scanning the back of the library.
I mean, we all know what he's doing here.
Finding my center. My answer earns me two very perplexed looks. Takaris sent some books back for me with Zayden after the weapons run yesterday, probably still hoping to get on my good side. One by one, I remove the six books he gifted, stacking them on the table and placing the protective bag with Warwick's journal on top. Krovlish is not my strong suit.
Krovlish isn't anyone's.
I grin as Sawyer cuts off mid-sentence at the sight of Jacinia.
Good morning, he signs at me. Is that right?
You've got it, he takes off in her direction.
Would have been way more fun my way. She's got a great sense of humor, Riddick mumbles.
He's learning to sign, Rhiannon smiles and sits on the edge of the table. We shamelessly turn to watch Sawyer greet Jacinia.
And he's already coming back?
Riddick's brow furrows. I glance at the clock. He only knows about four phrases, but he's catching on. So is Krovlish Jacinia's specialty? Rhi asks, picking up the top book, which is an accounting of the first emergence of the Venon after the Great War. At least I think it is.
No.
I shake my head as the library door opens exactly at 7:30. Right on time, as always.
It's his.
Seriously?
Riddick mutters as I walk away from the table.
You asked to see me?
Dane folds his arms across his chest.
Of your own volition, no orders or anything?
For a second, I hesitate. Then I remember that he stabbed Varish. He called the formation to split the quadrant. And when the truth came to light, he chose exile with a group of people who despise him because it was the right thing to do. I need your help.
All right. He nods without waiting for an explanation. And just like that, I remember why he used to be one of my favorite people on the continent. That's not the word for rain, Dane says the next day, tapping a symbol in Warwick's journal with the bottom of his pen as we sit in the Wardstone chamber, our backs against the wall, our legs stretched out in front of us. The noon sun beats down on us, but it's still cold enough to see my breath. I'm pretty sure it is, I lean in, studying the journal that's equally balanced on his leg and mine. Did you ask Jacinia? He asks, turning from the ward-centered entries of the journal back to the beginning. She thought it was rain, too. But she specializes in Moranian, right? He tilts his head and studies the first entry. My eyes widen, jumping to his profile. What? He glances at me, then abruptly turns his attention back to the journal. Don't look so shocked that I remember Jacinia's specialization. I listen when you talk. He flinches. At least I used to. When did you stop? The question leaves my mouth before I can catch it. He sighs and shifts his position slightly, just enough to tell me he's nervous. 2 years in the quadrant couldn't rid him of that tell. I don't know, probably when I said goodbye to you on conscription day. Mine, of course, not yours. Right, you said hello to me on mine. A smile tugs at my lips. Actually, I think you asked what the hell I was doing there. He scoffs, then leans his head back against the wall and looks skyward. I was so pissed and scared. I finally made it to second year, gained the privilege of visiting other quadrants so I might be able to see you. And instead of being tucked away safely with the scribes, you show up dressed in black for the Rider's Quadrant on your mother's orders, so dizzy that I still have no idea how you made it across the parapet. His throat works as he swallows. All I could think was that I just survived a year of hearing my friends' names called on the death roll, and I was going to make damn sure yours wasn't. And then you hated me for trying to give you what you'd always told me you wanted. That's not why I hate it. I press my lips in a tight line. You wouldn't let me grow up. And you were so fucking pig-headed that you knew what was right for me. You were never like that as a kid. He laughs, the self-deprecating sound echoing in the chamber. Are you the same person you were when you crossed the parapet? No, I shake my head. Of course not. First year hardened me in ways. I catch his look, complete with raised eyebrows. Oh, guess it changed you, too. Yeah, living only by the Codex will do that to you. Part of me wonders if that's why they push it on us so hard. They transform us into their perfect weapons, teach us to critically think about everything except the Codex and the orders they give. He scratches the brown scruff of his beard and looks down at the journal. Where are your translations for the beginning? Maybe we can compare the symbols. I skipped ahead to the ward entries, seeing as that's what we needed. He blinks. You skipped? You, of all people, didn't read a book from start to finish? The flash of a smile he tries to hide hits me somewhere in the vicinity of my stomach, reminding me of the days when he'd been my best friend. And suddenly this is too much. I scramble to my feet, dust my leathers off, and walk toward the stone. Vi, he says quietly, but the cavernous space amplifies it, so he may as well be shouting. We finally going to talk about what happened. The stone is the same empty cold under my hand as it was the night I failed to raise the wards. Do you know how to imbue? I ask, ignoring his question. Yes, his sigh feels strong enough to knock the wardstone over. And when I glance over my shoulder, I see him set the journal down on my pack and rise to his feet. Seconds later, he's standing next to me. I'm sorry, Violet. It feels like it should be imbued, don't you think? I drag my fingertips over the biggest of the etched circles. Reminds me of the way raw alloy feels, empty. I'm sorry for the role I played in their deaths. I'm so fucking sorry. Did you steal my memories every time you touched my face last year? I blurt out, letting the cold seep into my palm. Silence fills the chamber for a long moment before he finally responds softly. No. I nod and pivot to face him. So, just when you needed information you couldn't ask me for. He lifts his hand and puts it against the stone mere inches from mine, splaying his fingers wide. I did it by accident the first time. I was just so used to touching you, and you'd gotten close to Ryerson, and my father had pretty much bragged about the way your mother cut into him. I knew he had to be after revenge, but you wouldn't listen to me. He was never out for revenge, not with me. I shake my head. I know that now. He squeezes his eyes shut. I fucked up. A deep breath later, he opens them. I fucked up and trusted my dad when I should have trusted your judgment. And there's nothing I can say or do that's going to bring them back, bring Liam back. No, there isn't. My eyes water, and I force out a grimace of a smile that quickly falls. I'm so sorry, Violet. It's not all right, I whisper. I don't know how to even start making it all right. I just know that I can't think about Liam and look at you at the same time without... I shake my head. I don't want to hate you, Dane, but I'm not sure I'll ever be able to... My attention shifts to my hand, my very warm hand next to his on the stone. Are you imbuing the stone?
Yes, I thought that's what you wanted.
It is, my head bobs. How long do you think it would take to fully imbue something this big?
Weeks, maybe a month?
I move my hand, then return to my pack and crouch to stuff everything inside. I need your help with the journal. And that's not fair because I need to know that we won't talk about this, about Liam and Soleil again. At least not until I've a lot more distance.
Once it's all put away, I stand facing Dane again.
His shoulders droop, but his hand is still on the stone.
I can do that.
Thank you. I glance up at the overcast sky, stories above us.
I'm usually free for about a half hour this time of day.
Me too.
And I'll work on imbuing the stone. I'll ask Zayden to help too. I slip my arms through the straps and settle the pack on my shoulders. His hand falls from the stone.
About Ryerson.
My entire body tenses.
Be very careful with your words. Are you in love with him?
He asks, his voice breaking on the last word as he pivots to face me fully.
Because Garrick and I heard the end of what he said in the interrogation chamber. And trust me, I might be in love with him after that declaration. But are you really and truly?
Yes. I hold his stare long enough that he knows I mean what I say. And that's never going to change. Dane's jaw flexes and he nods once.
Then I'll trust him as much as you do.
I nod back slowly. I'll see you tomorrow.
Tomorrow, he agrees.
An excerpt from Major Offendra's Guide to the Writer's Quadrant, unauthorized edition. Mastery of one's signet does not occur at Besgaeth, nor in the years directly after. No writer alive truly believes they've reached the limitations of their power. The dead ones may feel differently. Chapter 50. Better.
A week later, Felix pops a grape into his mouth, then motions to the stacked rocks and the tendrils of steam at the base that only last a second before they're whisked away by the wind and snow.
You almost hit it that time.
I clench the energy-warmed conduit in my hand. I did hit it. I sway on my feet and shake off my exhaustion. Too many late nights have been spent translating Warwick's journal from the beginning. Too many lunches have been eaten in that cold Wardstone chamber, and I've definitely spent too much time with Dane. I'd almost forgotten how good he really is with languages, how quickly he catches on.
No.
Felix shakes his head, then plucks another grape from the bunch. How are those things not frozen? The ground has accumulated about 6 inches of snow in the hour we've been out here.
If you'd hit it, the rocks wouldn't be there anymore.
You said to use less power, remember? Smaller strikes, more control. I shake the orb in his direction. What would you call that?
Missing the target.
Snowflakes sizzle into steam as they land on the bare skin of my hands, and it's all I can do to not glare at the professor.
Here.
He shoves the bunch of grapes into the pack at his feet, then reaches for the orb, plucking it from my hand.
Strike the conduit.
I'm sorry? My eyes bulge as I swat a loose tendril of hair from my face.
Strike the conduit.
He says like it's the simplest task, holding the metal and glass orb only inches away from my fingers. I'd kill you.
If only you could aim,
he teases, his smile flashing white.
You clearly understand how energy and attraction work, as evidenced by how you took those wyvern out, right?
I struck into the cloud. My brow crinkles. I think. I can't really explain it. I just knew that lightning can exist within a cloud, and when I wielded, it was there.
Felix nods. It's about the energy fields. It's quite similar to magic that way. And you,
he touches my hand with the orb,
are the greatest energy field of all. Summon your power. But instead of letting the conduit have it all, cut it off yourself.
I shift my weight and swallow hard, fighting the tide of fire that lifts the hairs on my arm. Imagining the archive's doors shutting all but the last few inches, I allow only a fraction of Tarn's power to reach my hands. My fingertips graze the metal of the orb, and it crackles with the familiar sight of whitish-blue tendrils of pure energy branching from my fingertips against the glass and gathering into a single delicate stream at the alloy medallion in the center of the conduit. Unlike the shimmering strands I pull from Andarna's power to temper runes, this is physical, like a tiny, sustained lightning strike. A smile tugs at the corners of my mouth as I let the power flow from me into the conduit, just like I do every night, imbuing stone after stone, now that I know how to change them out once they're fully imbued. I love watching it do that. It's the only time my power is beauty without destruction, without violence.
You're not watching it, Violet. You're doing it, and you're supposed to love it. It's better to find joy in your power than it is to fear it.
I don't fear the power. How could I when it's so beautiful, so varied? I'm afraid of myself.
You shouldn't be,
Tarn lectures. He's been commenting off and on the last hour, whenever he hasn't been trying to get Andarna to stop chasing the 2 new flocks of sheep Brennan had moved into the valley.
I chose you, and dragons make no mistakes.
What is it like to go through life so self-assured?
It's life.
I manage not to roll my eyes by keeping all my focus on limiting Tarn's power.
Good. Keep going. Let it flow. But think trickle, not flood.
Felix slowly draws the conduit away.
Don't stop.
Every muscle in my body tenses, but I do as he asks and don't cut the stream of power. Tendrils of that same white-blue energy stretch the inch of airspace between my fingers and the orb.
What? My heart starts to pound so hard I can feel it in my ears, and the 5 separate filaments of power pulse in time with its beat.
That's you,
Felix says softly, gentler than he's ever been with me as he draws the orb away another inch, then another.
Then again, I'd be careful with me right now, too, if I were him.
Increase slowly.
The doors to my archives open just another foot or so, and the power stretches with no pain and only moderate heat, evaporating any unlucky snowflakes in its path.
You're starting to get it now, aren't you?
Felix retreats a full step, and my hand begins to tremble as I fight to amplify the power just enough to reach the conduit, but not strike.
Get what?
My arm is full on shaking now.
Control,
he grins, and I startle, my gaze swinging back to his. Power bursts through the doorway and rips through me in a streak of scalding heat, and I throw my hands up and away from Felix, a second before the strike splits the clouded sky, singeing the mountain on impact less than 30 feet up the ridge. Felix's red sword tail puffs steam in agitation, but all I feel from Taren is pride.
Well, you had control.
Felix hands the conduit back to me.
But at least that means you're capable.
For a while there, I wasn't sure. I wasn't either. I study the orb as if I've never seen it.
You wield your power like a battle axe.
And sometimes that's exactly what's needed. But you, of all people, he gestures to the daggers sheathed in my flight jacket,
should understand when a dagger is called for, when only the precise cut will do.
He lifts his pack from the ground and slings it over his shoulder.
We're done for today.
By Monday, you'll be able to keep that power flowing from, shall we say, 10 feet?
10 feet? There's no fucking way.
You're right.
He nods, turning toward his antsy dragon. Make it 15. His head tilts to the side and he pauses as if he's talking to his dragon.
When you get back to the house, tell Ryerson we'll need both of you in the assembly chamber at 5 o'clock.
But Zayden isn't.
I lower my shields and sure enough, there he is. The shadowy pathway between our minds is strong with proximity and heavy with
weariness.
You're home early, everything all right?
No.
He doesn't give any details, and his tone doesn't invite further questions.
Is Sigale all right?
I ask Taren as I walk up the forearm he's dipped for me.
She's unharmed.
Frustration and anger simmer, then quickly scald our bond, and I quickly shield him out to keep from losing control over my own emotions. A half hour later, after flying back to the valley and watching Andarna show off her developing ability to extend her wing while counting to 30 with enthusiastic applause, I walk into the chaotic halls of Ryerson House and head straight for the kitchen. Once I have a plate of what I need, I start up the sweeping staircase and find Garrick, Bodhi, and Heaton talking on the second floor landing. The look on Garrick's soot-covered face matches the ominous weight of Zayden's mood, and when Heaton turns their head, I nearly fumble the plate. The right side of their face is one giant contusion, and their right arm is splinted from the elbow down.
What happened?
Garrick and Bodhi exchange a glance that makes my stomach sink. Even knowing that Zayden is alive and not in our bedroom on this floor, but 4 stories above me.
They took Pavis,
Heaton tells me quietly, looking to see that we're not overheard.
I blink. That can't be right.
That town is only an hour's flight east of Draithis, Heaton nods slowly.
Took 7 of them, and a horde of wyvern. Town was overrun before we even got there. Your sister, she's all right. Just taking Emery to the healers for a shattered leg. She ordered us out after.
Their voice breaks and they look away.
After Nyra Voldaren fell during our mission today,
Garrick finishes.
Nyra!
She was the Quadrant's senior wing leader last year and was damn near invincible.
Yeah,
She went in to defend a group of civilians that had taken shelter near the armory and... His jaw works. And there was nothing left of her. Or Mala. It was just like Soleil and Fuel. Completely drained. I'm sure they'll update everyone in battle brief tomorrow, but they recalled all first and second lieutenants to Erasia to regroup. I think they're going to change the wing structure, Heedon adds.
They have to,
Garrick agrees. Leaving the less experienced riders back from the front doesn't do a damn thing when the front is this fucking fluid.
Did they take Cordon?
Garrick shakes his head.
Skipped right over it and hundreds of other miles. They targeted Pavis and stayed there.
It's a good staging point, Bodhi drops his voice when a trio of flyers out of First Wing walk by.
For Dreyfus.
Has to be.
They're coming for us.
An excerpt from Captain Lara Dural's Guide to Vanquishing the Venon, property of Clithsbane Academy. Many of our most esteemed tacticians have tried to estimate the approaching tipping point, where the outcome of the war may have been decided even though we still fight. Many believe it will come in the next decade. I fear it will arrive much sooner than that. Chapter 51. We split as the hallway grows too crowded, and I continue up and up the stairs, climbing to the fifth floor, then nodding to Rhi and Tara as I pass by the open door to Rhi's room. Clearly, by their wide smiles, they don't know yet. And I decide to give them a few more minutes of blissfully ignorant happiness and keep walking down the long hallway to the back stairs. The service stairway is dark, but mage lights wink on as I climb the steep, wrought iron spiral staircase to its end. I open the door with lesser magic, then step out onto the narrow walkway that runs along the apex of the roofline and close it behind me. Zayden sits on the edge of the small defensive turret 30 feet away, and the only shadows surrounding him are the ones the dying afternoon light casts. If I didn't feel his turmoil saturating the bond between us, I'd think he was up here for the view, the very picture of control. Step by careful step, I cross the eastern line of the roof, careful not to let the breeze rip the plate from my hand or screw with my balance. What did I tell you about risking your life in order to talk to me? He asks, his gaze focused on the town below. I'd hardly call that risking my life. I set the plate on the wall, then climb up to sit next to Zayden. But I do now understand how you're so damn good at parapet.
Been practicing since I was a kid, he admits.
How did you know I was up here?
Other than being able to track you through the bond, you told me in a letter that you'd sit up here waiting for your father to come home. I reach for the plate, then hold it in front of him. I know chocolate cake isn't going to fix this, but in my defense, I got it for you when I just thought you'd had a shit day, before I knew what really happened. He glances at the slice, then leans in and brushes his mouth over mine before grabbing it.
I'm not used to people taking care of me. Thank you.
Get used to it. The cold seeps into my leathers from the wall beneath us, and I note the heavy gray clouds moving in from the west. It's already snowing up the pass. I bet we get 7 inches tonight.
Maybe more if you're good.
A corner of his mouth lifts as he cuts into the cake with the fork. You're making dick jokes? I brace my hands on the top edge of the wall.
You're talking about the weather.
He takes a bite, then cuts another one and hands me the fork. I was being considerate and giving you the option of not talking about what happened. Would you rather I talk about how translating is going with Dane? I take the offered bite and give the fork back.
Damn. No wonder he loves this cake. It's better than anything we had at Besgaeth. I'd rather you stop being considerate and ask.
His gaze locks with mine. I swallow, getting the feeling he's not just talking about today's loss.
Were you there?
Yes. The fork clicks against the plate as he sets it in his lap.
Taryn didn't tell me.
I think Sigale somehow blocked him out. He cocks his head to the side. Pretty sure we're both blocked out right now, which means
they're fighting. There's a hard wall beyond my own shields.
Garrick and I flew in from Drathus once Emery put out the call, but by the time we got there,
he shakes his head.
Imagine Resson, but about 10 times the size. 10 times the number of civilians.
Oh.
The cake settles in my stomach like ash and we both fall quiet. A long moment passes before I rise to the challenge in his eyes and ask,
what are you up here thinking about?
We're outmatched. He looks away and flexes his jaw. Outmatched and spread too fucking thin to be anything but a nuisance to them. We can't communicate fast enough. We aren't effective or any kind of real barrier when we're sending out riots of three.
His gaze shifts eastward.
They can take the rest of Poromiel, take us whenever they want, and I have no clue why they don't. We have no idea how many of them are assembling in Zolia or where the fuck all these wyvern are hatching from. There's no plan except hold the line, and the line isn't holding.
We weren't ready.
I look out over the rapidly growing town, noting the dozens of new roofs under construction and the uncountable number of chimneys letting out smoke from the homes within.
We never could have been ready,
he counters, lifting the fork, then stabbing it into the cake.
So don't go adding this to the list of things you blame yourself for. Even if we'd waited to come after the forge was running, after we had enough riders to imbue the alloy and temper runes for the daggers.
His shoulders dip in a sigh.
I'll never say this in front of the others, but we're 50 years too late.
The next breath I take is heavy and strained by the tightness in my ribs.
What do we do about it?
Besides the obvious, Dane and I have to translate faster, just in case there's any actual hope of raising the wards. We already know that one of the symbols I translated originally was incorrect. Rain isn't rain, it's flame. Which, of course, helped us not at all.
What we do isn't my decision. Your brother's the tactician, and Suri and Ulysses command the army.
He shoves a bite into his mouth.
It's your city.
His province, really. The irony is not lost on me. He hands me another forkful of cake, but this bite has lost its sweetness and goes down like sand.
Your sister ordered me off the field.
My eyebrows rise. His laugh has a hard, sarcastic edge.
She ordered me.
I had killed one of them and was retrieving my dagger. Another problem, I might add, when the second one channeled right behind Sigale. If she'd launched a second later, this cake would have gone to waste.
He sets the fork down. My heart starts to pound erratically. There's not a mark on him, and yet I'd almost lost him without even knowing he'd been that close to never coming home again.
The thought is so unfathomable that I'm stunned silent.
She swept me up in a claw. But your sister saw what happened, and that's when she called it a loss. Not because Nyra died, or the three flyers from the Footwing Drift, or because we only had 5 dragons left.
He shakes his head.
She called it because I was with them, and she wouldn't risk you.
Is that what she told you?
The first flakes of snow descend.
She didn't have to tell me. It was pretty fucking obvious.
Then you don't know
I do. He counters, then immediately closes his eyes.
I know. And through the anger and the horror of watching all those civilians flee, watching them die, I realized she treated me like every marked one has treated you since threshing. like you're just a vulnerable extension of me. I don't think anyone would ever mistake you for vulnerable. I reach for his hand and lace our fingers. But yes. He finds my gaze and closes his hand around mine. I'm sorry. Thank you. But as annoying as it is, I get it. We're tethered. I shrug. He kisses me quiet, hard, and quick. For the rest of our lives. By the time a week passes, no one bats an eye at the sight of Dane and me huddled at a library table, long after most cadets have found their beds for the night. We're still meeting at noon as well, and Zayden stops in when he can to help imbue the stone. And that little strand of lightning Felix has pushed me to sustain? Turns out that can imbue too. Desperation sinks her claws into me by the week after. We have nearly the entire journal translated, but the passage about raising the wards still isn't different enough for my first failed interpretation to act on. We definitely get that Warwick insisted that once the blood from one of the six powerful riders is used on the stone, it can't be used on the other he's referenced carving. Have you noticed his phrasing is so much more casual in the rest of the journal compared to the one section we actually need to understand? Dane rubs his eyes and sits back in his chair beside me. Like he's deliberately fucking with us from the grave. True. There are only four entries left. What in Malik's name will we do if the answer isn't in one of those? He has no issue doling out advice on authoring the codex.
Or detailing whatever mess of relationships the six of them got into.
Dane nods, cracking a huge yawn. Exactly. I glance over at him. You should get to bed. You should too. He glances over at the nearby clock. It's almost midnight. I'm sure Ryerson is wondering. He's not here. I shake my head and sigh with entirely too much self-pity. His squad is watching over Dreythus this week. But you should really get some sleep. I'm only going to stay another few minutes. His brow knits. Go, I urge him with a reassuring smile. I'll see you tomorrow. He sighs but nods and pushes his chair back standing, then stretching his arms above his head. Don't tell him I said so. He drops his arms. But the way I've heard he wants to reorganize the combat squads by strengths, since the active riders don't have a full wing to pull from, is brilliant. I'll be sure not to tell him, I promise, a corner of my mouth tugging upward. Dane takes his pack off the table. See you tomorrow. I nod, and he walks out. The library is comfortably quiet as I pore over the next entry, translating into what we call our draft journal. The air has grown cold enough, I say out loud as I write the words into the draft journal. To see my blood in the mornings. I blink, then stare at the symbol for blood. My mind spins at the possibility, and then I turn back to earlier entries just to be sure. Every single time we translate the symbol blood, the word breath fits even better. We have the wrong word. The blood of life is actually the breath of life, and setting the stone ablaze in an iron flame. I close the journals and sit back in my chair. The six doesn't